This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show, and sorry about that. You pushed the wrong button. Anyway, I had several things lined up, and we'll see how they play out today. And we're in the Christmas season, so things are looking pretty, pretty good. So what we have, I was going to have some guests, and either they're delayed or, you know, it is a holiday season, and God only knows what we all do. But yesterday was, and the day before, actually, that we know that the world was going to end. And either we are, this is the afterlife or whatever, I don't know what you would, how you would describe it, but it seems to me that it's the same things that occurred the day before the world was the end are still occurring, so I'm going to think that it didn't end. But anyway, during this time, I saw a display of people working, and you know, we have this issue. We describe it as homelessness, and we describe it as the down and out people, but the reality is that it is people without a roof over their head. But we really don't give an account or take into consideration, we, not all of us, because as I'm going to talk, a number of us do care. And in that caring, they reach out and they go way beyond and above what people normally do to help those that are, and I like to describe them as less fortunate, because we don't take into account, and I shouldn't generalize, but I say as I grew up, people fail to, or were not honest about taking things into account, why we would have someone that is without a home, or what have you. And let's say you are, let's start back with the founding of this country. And I'd like to, if you, any of you got any comments, but I'd like to do something that rarely is done. And let's just try and talk about the root of all evil and starting from scratch. So we arrive at the shores of this country, and the settlers come in, and we start to displace the native people, and we chase them around, and we beat them up and shoot them up and poison them and do whatever, because we've discovered them and what have you. So that population of people are displaced, and so you look at them, the ones that are displaced and impacted, and they don't have a home, because you got them on the run and living on reservations, and so you're prospering with all this newfound wealth and that you as a discoverer. And so you have that population of people that exist. And in the old days, no one wished to talk about this. They like to start right now and say, well, the people that don't have anything are either lazy, made bad choices. But that might be true in some instances, but I'd like to go all the way back and start, and maybe in doing so, we can find a soft spot in our heart and realize that those that are less fortunate wasn't by choice, but by circumstance. And those of you that think that this is making an excuse, hey, it is not. It is simply trying to openly and overtly speak to something that many people won't talk about, and the first thing they'll dismiss it is, well, let's get on over that, get past that, you know. Well, the fact is an entire population, a nation of people were displaced. So we have that element in our history. No one ever attempted to address that within the government or anyone. And what happens is that with this, no one is willing to accept the fact or responsibility that the displacement of the native people will eventually resurface and pop up in our society, and there will be a population of people without anything because we have robbed them and created this problem for them. Agree or disagree, I'm really not seeking any comment in that fashion, but what I would say is that we've ignored that and it's been dismissed. So we have that problem. It was never addressed, never really given full thought, and they tossed them to the reservations, and you have that. That's one part of it. Then you bring in a nation, a population of people that are slaves, and they work for nothing because you treat them like nothing, and that population expands because you're breeding them. You're not just bringing them here, you're breeding them all for the sake of wealth and growth and industrialization, and you want to raise cotton or sugar and what have you. So the people there that are brought to these shores and serve as slaves. Well, that's a population that will eventually be declared free. But again, there was really no real concerted effort, honest effort to address it. So we label them as misfits, the unfortunate, the downtrodden. And we yet to acknowledge, we as Americans have yet to acknowledge that we contribute to this, whether you agree or disagree, and we'll put that one on the shelf. Then we, and all because we're seeking to profit and build a strong nation, and but we're not building houses because we don't want to be a socialist government, we want to be a capitalist society, listed society. So because we believe in individual growth and what have you, and every man for himself, if he's successful, fine. So then we bring in the immigrants from various places. And yes, a great many of them were successful, and a great many of them didn't have the same structured bigotry, planned bigotry that was part of the system. They were allowed to pass. They were allowed to get things going, and because they bore white skin or what have you, and so there they are. Not all. And when we look at the overall makeup of people today that are have no homes or downtrodden, as some describe them, all hues, all colors, but no one has really spoken to or will acknowledge that it is the capitalistic approach that left these problems never addressed, because we believe that every man for himself and should grow. But through this process, you have the native people who are displaced, you have the slaves who are now freed, and you now have, you look to them, and then you bring in immigrants. And so the immigrants arrive not speaking English, and yes, some of them send their children to school and what have you. But when you look at the overall makeup, what has occurred and what has taken place and how it influences, we've really never given much thought or concern or behave in a fashion that it is our society that actually created, in the way we approach things, some of this homelessness. And what happens is, we stand back today and say, they're lazy. Let's throw in the element of drugs. Let's throw in the element of mental health. And I know some of you will say, well, we should be giving mental health treatments for free. We shouldn't give medical for free. But it's an unfair assessment and statement that you lob everyone and put them in this big box without ever acknowledging that is the growth of this nation, the foundation of this nation, is part of the contribution to what we have today. Unless you think in a matter of hours and weeks, but if you think in long-term impacts and effects. And so everything along the way, supposedly you try and fix it. And so we move today with situations where there's alcohol abuse. You try dealing with trying to adjust to someone else's culture and be forced through the years to do that, be forced to take away your language, and you can't speak your native tongue, you can't do these things, you can't be native because you're on the move, you're on the trail of tears or the long walk or those types of things. So you never really get to settle back in, and then you're met with discrimination when you try to leave the reservation or you try to leave the sharecropper's stranglehold. Where do you go? So you migrate to the north because you, from the south, if you're a slave or a free man now or a sharecropper, you leave. So what do you do? Go to Chicago and invest in a bank? Where do you get the monies from? So all of these things have built up. And here in America, I know that some of you now, we've gotten to this point where there are no color lines. We're colorblind. We're a mixing pot or a salad of some sort. But the reality is, these things that created the problems initially were really never honestly adjusted, spoken to, worked on, attempted to fix. They came with affirmative action. That too was kicked down and frowned on. So today, when others had, if it was a race, let's say, others had a head start, a starting gun in a sense, fired, and there was some people got to jump, so to speak. So when I see homelessness here, I don't see the individual who was, as some say, lazy, some say, drugged out. What I see is a system, a culture that has gone bad, that is finally playing itself out. Because things can only go for so long, and then there is a capacity, or it hits the peak. And what we're seeing today is the gentrification of these lands and building of houses, and they're all looking alike, and you got to have money. But if you come from the old school, through up the system, you really didn't get the education because you had different obstacles. Like your race, like you didn't fit in. Or if you were a woman, you didn't fit. And a lot of the homeless people that we see now without homes are women. And we see the way the laws are written. Sometimes a woman gets, she's drugged through you know what, end up with nothing in a divorce. The man ends up with everything and goes off and marries another woman and creates another family. So you now have a family, as I saw yesterday, some were, they were disposable. You know, you marry early and then you have a family. Well, you want to try it again and get it right, so you divorce this one and she's left her to herself and her family to try and struggle and raise. And so when that one individual can't provide for that family, she then has to turn to aid. She has to turn to the community group. She has to turn to, and then eventually, due to the high cost of rent and the cost of living, finds herself without a home, finds herself with the family without a home. So you look at this and you think, as you hear, and you get frustrated when you hear people say, well, they're just lazy and they're drug addicts, and it might be true, but in order to deal with some of it, it is. So when you look at all of this, a great many of the people that are homeless or without a home, or simply a lot of them have been arrested and imprisoned where there's no transition. And yeah, some were taken in for drugs, arrested, incarcerated for drugs. And again, in some instances, some people can get caught with drugs and pick up the phone and nothing happened. Just a recent reminder, look at Kurt Caldwell's daughter. I mean, that was a hint of the drug use and destruction of campaign signs, and what happened? Laughed it off. But the reality is, I know some young men out there that, along the Waianae Coast, Waimanalo and what have you, have gone to jail for serious charges when it could have been dealt with differently. So you got that portion of the population can't get a job, and you find them working in situations where they are willing to work, but they can't do much because they have this label now. So you didn't free them. You basically created another type of slavery. You created another type of an obstacle that you're supposedly, if you go to prison and you pay your time and you pay for your crime, supposedly, you're able to step back in society. But there's nothing out there that really helps unless they're nonprofits. But as far as the government is concerned, they arrest you, prosecute you, open the gate and let you out when your time's up. Where do you live? You go back to your family. So there's a portion of people that are homeless that under that condition. So if I could get anyone out there to just a government or what have you to say to themselves, we are contributing to this problem as well, not 100%. If I could hear what make me happy, would to hear someone acknowledge, just upright, up front, that this is what took place. We're not asking for sympathy when we speak of slavery. We're not asking for sympathy when we speak of the destruction and the killing and the maiming and displacement of Native people. Now, it's a little too late for the apologies and what have you, but to acknowledge it and incorporate it and say that today, because you had such power and you had all the guns and you had all of this, talking about guns in society, you have created a situation where people were never, ever brought into the fold and given equal opportunity, because it was not the intent. It's not in a capitalistic society as we know it, and the history is there. So we look at this and we say, those people, we got to do something about. We got to move them, and we move them around. And nothing's really is being done that is, all those things that can be done, there's money being thrown by the state and the city and the federal government, but somewhere along the way it gets squandered. And nonprofits who have executive offices and directors and fancy vans to get here and do that and do this, but yet none of this is working. So the honest thing to do would be for it to revisit this whole process, acknowledge that it is the system that contribute to the current state of affairs. And yes, I know individual choices have also contributed, but the basic problem is how we grew as a nation. And I'll argue with anyone, and I know that I could speak it in a different fashion if you'd like to, but just for those that I believe it really matters, and that is, unless we start as a nation and as a people, and homeless, those without homes across the nation, in parks across the nation, in streets and areas that you see homeless people struggling, barely making it. And the unfortunate thing is that there are a lot of children. Lots. And so if we want to tackle homeless issues, start with the state government. We have more meetings, and we have homeless czars, and we've had them, and we have, and they move about. But yet, you would think by now we could get a handle on it. And so what we do, the trickery that we allow, you know, I talk about the slavery and all of that in the old days, but follow how this works. And it's still prevalent, and it's still amongst us, practices that are being employed. So let's just say, for example, the Kakaako Tower. The capitalistic approach is we want to beautify and bring jobs and money and what have you, and we're going to take this public land, or land that the public generally uses, and we're going to convert it to a high-rise. And in doing so, we're going to create a number of affordable homes. And we're going to do those affordable homes, and what we'll do as part of that, and if you allow us to build it and make exceptions and exemptions to the laws and what have you, and if you allow us to do that, we're going to give a certain percentage of affordable homes. Well, first of all, that is probably one of the craziest things there are, because even if what is affordable and who can afford it? And if I'm paying $1 million for an apartment, do I want to see a guy who comes in with a $300,000? It's going to cause some problems with my property, and that's the fear. So here's the trick. So they get the government, and the government is part of this, our leaders. They say, well, okay, we'll allow you to build in it if you agree and promise to build affordable homes. What you don't know is that the government permits that builder to come back and visit the city offices and say, well, you know, we'd like to buy back that affordable housing thing and give so much money. And I've shared with you on some of the early shows about a year or so ago where this practice occurs. And you might build at Colina, but your affordable homes that you have is up in Makakilo, because you come back and revisit and get a different agreement. So the approach to homelessness, or those without homes, or the less fortunate, it's not a sincere one. And then they move to the beach. They move to the sidewalks, because there's this constant, what I call harassment and herding of the people in these predicaments. Never speaking, but the czar is still wearing three-piece suits and going to fancy meetings and getting per diem and flying here and there and doing whatever. Yet the people, and we toss in this thing where, you know, and I can't let it go. There's two people that I'm really concerned with that is in government that do nothing for the people and contribute to the demise of the people and the homeless. And that is one, Senator Will Lespera, and the other one is the city councilman, Nestor Garcia. The others do nothing. But these are people that, taking consideration of all things, they should be advocates, being aggressive. Well, Will Lespera has on occasion, and currently, his son, and we've talked about this, I'm repeating matters, but his son sits in a situation where he is the director or one of the higher management levels in the at the Next Step shelter, what have you. And the Waikiki Community Center, Health Center, is supposed to handle areas out to Evan, Hal Bush, and those areas. And speaking with some of the people out there, now, they haven't seen them in months. But yet, we get monies. And we give monies to these organizations. We've taken city money and federal monies and given them to these organizations. And yet, they fail the people. They do nothing for them. So I broached the subject and I talked in this fashion to say there's a lot more to it than walking up or pulling up to the beach and you look around and you see these tents or no tents, just lean-tos or whatever they're trying to shield themselves from the elements. And we quickly conclude that they're lazy, downtrodden, but we don't know. We seem to have erased history. We don't know those individuals. We don't know that in the parks there's people with problems with memory. There's people with mental illnesses, bona fide mental illnesses that go untreated. And so the idea is this way. What I fear is that in Kakaako, for example, I've heard in past years say, and Hal Bush area, we should just go ahead and develop it because look at the type of people that it attracts in its current state. So what's the current state? Well, if you were to go to Hal Bush today, I mean today, this Sunday, and you go over there and you will attempt as a taxpaying citizen who you know you're being taxed for infrastructure in our parks or whatever, and attempt to use the restroom. And using that restroom is impossible because it's boarded up. But what is in place is 3 to 4 portable potties. And those portable potties, in some occasion, should be considered a health risk just if by walking by them. But how is it that the senator, the city council, and these people allow a facility that we've paid for and we have maintenance people to manage it and do maintenance on it? How is it that we would allow that facility to be closed for years? Now, is it because the people that are homeless come in and shower, wash up? Or is it that you just abandon that and you're now paying an individual for maintenance and giving him insurance and all of that kind of money to as an employee, and then you go and rent porta-potties, causing a greater taxing of the taxpayer by having to pay for that service? So it is being homeless or having no house or being mentally ill on the beach is one thing. But what is it that happens on the part of the government that amplifies it, that exacerbates it, that makes it worse? So it's quite easy to own up. Maybe solutions would be to homelessness in some instances, or reducing the numbers, would be to develop and incorporate a transition, a bona fide transition facility with re-education of people that have been incarcerated. A bona fide aggressive effort to treat the individuals and don't come along and say, well, as a private individual, we don't have a right to incarcerate them because of their mental health. So, in other words, leaving them in place and letting things go to hell in the handbasket is conducive to, it gives a good argument to the governor when he says that, well, look at the place. I mean, it's run down and what have you. No, it's not run down. You let it run down. You've created this situation. And I, these are just my views, what I see, what I feel when I pull up and see tents. I don't see someone violating society. I see someone that has been violated by society. Because, again, it's the survival not of the fittest in our situation. It's survival of the fortunate. So if you're fortunate to have been born on a pineapple plantation and your father was a worker and things worked out and he got lucky and made some money or something worked out in his way and you were able to go to school and do that, that's the fortunate. It doesn't bring into the fold the fittest because there's always going to be an exception. And on plantations, they're not giving away anything. So when the plantation closes, bottoms up, what happened to those people? They move to the cities or their families. Or what happens if a family has a father and a mother and they work on the plantation and he has five kids and then the father dies or the father leaves or whatever or become debilitated? What happens to that wife and her four or five kids? These stories, we don't see that when we walk up, and we don't know that these are the prodigy or the children or the offspring of that two generations back or three generations back that were in that predicament. We don't see that. There was nothing, no safety net, no nothing. So when we look at this and we say, there's a lot of jobs out there, believe it or not, and call I get with you right here. There's a lot of jobs out there. But here's the problem. Some of us are so greedy that there are people that live on the beach that have the ability to serve as an engineer or to serve as a carpenter. But within state and city government, you have double difference because the system allows that. That's the, not to do anything to do with fit, but the fortunate. You're fortunate to have someone that would allow you to turn around, retire in one position, and then go and rehire in another position when the guy on the beach was kicked out or not allowed in. Good morning, Paul. Do you have a comment or question?
Hi, Carol. Listen, I always like to say these statistics because they reveal a lot. You know, there's about 18 million homes and apartments across this land, housing apartments, and there's maybe 3 to 5, probably more, ill housed, or having the homeless folks. A lot of folks are pretty ill housed too, stay on their friend's couch or whatever. But, this is what happens when you have this capitalist system. You can't just occupy these places and make them a place where people could stay. They stay vacant and they rot and they deteriorate all to serve the money system, you know, so that they can make money. The deal is you've got a whole industry, a whole real estate industry that isn't based on number one housing people, but making money for folks, you know. So and here's another one. I just think it's just unbelievable. Back in the late 70s, you had about $83 billion in HUD low-income housing that was happening. I mean, that was our budget. And now, I'm not quite sure about it. I know just for homeless, it's just a little over $1 billion that they're spending to help homeless folks all parts of the country. That is so minuscule. And here's another thing. There's a study that was just did that it just was had, and they figured about $20 billion. That's a little tiny drop of the bucket. Would be enough to make sure everybody has a place to stay through Section 8 and other kind of things or whatever. That's so minuscule. I mean, you're talking about a couple of aircraft carriers and a few fighter planes and that kind of stuff. And why, I mean, this is going back 30 years ago. Why have we decided why have we made a policy that we don't come? We're not going to make sure people are housed. Because I'll tell you what, when you're not housed, try to do a job. Try to go to a job and live in a tent somewhere at night. Or try to get your life together. And this is half the folks are mentally ill. And they couldn't help it. They were born with these genetic malfunctions. But they've been cutting that, like nothing to do. And then they just demonize homeless folks. Oh, you're just kind of lazy. You just like to sit on the sidewalk and drink and smoke and just carry on, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, a lot of folks, that's what they end up doing. Is the conditions that they have to live under are so awful. They can't cope with it. Some of those folks are able to we try and cope with it as best we can, but, you know. Anyway, I just thought this would add to, you know, this discussion, you know. It all comes down to a political will, you know. We can solve this problem. I mean, I remember back in the 60s, after World War II, 50s, 60s, I mean, housing was a big priority, man. You know, and most folks were not. There was no real homelessness. People lived in shacks. I mean, you know, in not great places. A lot of folks, but at least they had a place to stay out of the weather. You know. Anyway, I'll let you go and listen to the rest of what you're saying. I think you're really getting onto some good stuff there. Oh, okay.
Are you there? Dave? Lost Dave there. But anyway, again, now some of you may disagree wholeheartedly, and I understand. And some of you probably think that this is the craziest thing you've ever heard me say. But what I would say, just the opposite. It is the craziest things that we refuse to talk about. It is some of the most insensitive behavior, and we so quickly dismiss it. And in order to know what the solution is, you should occupy in your mind the causes, the cause and effect. We are seeing, if we only think in a matter of minutes, fine. But if we think historically and all these factors that we have the answers right at hand. That with acknowledging what has transpired in the past, what triggered most of this, we then can get a handle on it. But if we're sincere, but if we're not, and I'm not objecting to capitalism or anything, I mean, whatever system we have, but you, at some point you can't say that we're doing this for the betterment of the people, but there is a percentage of people that's just going to get thrashed. There's going to be several million that's not going to have anything, are going to struggle. But for the sake of capitalism, we're going to move forward. So when we move forward, that's the big question. What is it that we're doing? What are we moving forward for? If we are able to sit down and say that a portion of us is going to be expendable. We're going to have. But here's something that's new, the gentrification and the importation of the others from other countries who have been successful, and they've then come here. So Hawaii, for example, is a perfect place, the perfect example where everyone wants, when they've successfully made it, whatever country they're from, they can move in and buy large portions of land and build it and drive up the rent and drive up the taxes. And the government comes along and tax you, and so you can't afford it because you've retired. And now we see senior citizens out there with shopping carts.
We see senior citizens walking along with nothing. And I know you're probably going to dismiss most of this. They're crazy. But I don't believe. I think the people that are crazy is the ones that drive by and look at them and buy into this game that it can't be fixed. When the governor, you see how quick the czar, this gentleman that was with the Catholic Church, and then he plops down in the czar seat, and then now he's at IHS, wherever he goes. So, and then we brought in Kiffin and what have you. Where is the sustainability? Where is the real commitment when they float like butterflies in and out of government? That speaks of what the government's real intentions and purpose is. So being displaced by government activities and finding ourselves pointing the finger at others, and I do this, talk about this today because that's what we will be talking about anyway, and some of the people that have contributed yesterday, and I'll talk about it in the next hour and share with you what I witnessed. There's Polly Grace and Wyandotte. More than 1,200 people assembled, and these are people that have no homes or just have fallen on hard times, or and the children. But I can tell you one thing. What I saw yesterday, there's this lady, she's about 4 feet tall. I'm probably four feet, a couple inches. Little tiny lady. And for 25 years, she has been feeding and assembling with the aid of others people that are, quote, less fortunate. And any one of us, I don't care who you are, if you think it's an exception, any one of us, I don't care how much money you have today, the more you have, the quicker, I believe, now in this system, you can end up on the street. Because you get sick, you got good insurance, but depending on the sickness and the illness or whatever, your conditions, they're going to look at you, and if you go to a home, and I know that you can buy into a retirement home, but all of that is potentially short-lived, depending on your finances, depending on your illness, and you too can find yourself out on the street. You too can find yourself. I spoke with one lady that is out on the street now, and her husband passed and left her quite well, but she had a son who wanted to marry again, and married and had another family and wanted to buy a new house because he was busy paying also child support for the other, and reinvested and took out monies and loans against her property because he was the executor or something, however it was, and she found herself homeless. So circumstances is what really causes people and situations and how people treat people. But anyway, this theme yesterday was at the Kalae Loa Raceway Park. And to see more than 1,200 people being respected and shared with is absolutely, and especially, this all happened the day after the world was supposed to end. So why it's so interesting is that some of us didn't pay any attention to that nonsense, like Paula Grace. She didn't pay attention to the world ending. She knew that if there's a need for the human spirit to be nurtured every day, even with the apocalyptic occurrence was knocking at our doorstep, she decided to hell with that, and we're going to put on this party, this annual Christmas party. So this is the 25th. There were companies out there that donated, and you're talking about coming together. Didn't see any government. I saw one individual, and we'll talk about briefly about the other companies that participated and helped her. But imagine, if one lady, slightly more than 4 feet tall, and I think she's either in her 80s or nearing, I might be giving too much to her age, but to put this together with the aid of her family and the aid of, I think there was PVT Land Company, HECO, gold medal, metal gold, Vince Monavai, and to see it come together, they didn't imagine it would never have come together if they felt that the people that they were targeting and going to share with did something wrong and that's why they're out on the beach, or did something wrong, that's why they're in the shelter, or was lazy because that's why they're in the shelter. They didn't see that. They saw there's a human being, they saw a human spirit, and they tried to nurture it. And when you see, we're going to post some of the pictures up on carolcox.com, and when you see the smiles on these children and their parents, I don't think you'd have a dry eye. I had a difficult time, not because feeling sorry for them, but being impressed that while the rest of the world was worried about the world coming to an end and how sweet it was, here's a person never even apparently didn't care. She's worried about how she was going to make other human beings feel good. You try it and see how long you can do it. And I tell you, I was thoroughly impressed. And so, anyway, we'll come back and talk about that. And I wanted to talk about this. We talked about the Humane Society. But today's article in opinion piece and the paper is an invitation for great comments and great criticism of the system and the Humane Society and Pam Burns. We're going to talk about that a bit, and we'll hopefully, when we do, you'll look to other organizations. The ones that are really out there, in my opinion, that are really working and caring for the animals and not caring for themselves, but putting themselves out, like Polly Grace. But anyway, I'll be back in the next hour, and don't hesitate to call in. And those of you that don't agree with what I said, go. The phone's open. Help yourself express. I've just expressed my opinions, and they stand. And so you're welcome to call in and share yours. I won't interfere. Bye-bye.
Myself a little taste. The music is nice and swaying, and of course I really dig the place. Of course I haven't had much sleep lately, and I feel sort of down and out.
Yeah, but look over there in the corner, man.
Oh yeah, that's something to shout about. Pretty baby, girl, don't you go nowhere.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, pretty baby, yeah. Girl, don't you go nowhere. Cause as soon as I pay the bartender, girl, I'll be there. She looked up and blushed and smiled, and my heart skipped a beat. Back from her head down to her feet. Hey, barkeep, better come in and get your bread. This little girl's getting ready to split. I'm about to go out of my head. Hey, pretty baby. Girl, don't you go out that door.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, pretty baby.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness. Oh, that's all. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She had a grief.
carolcox.com, or you can send me an email at carol@carolcox.com, and anything, any questions you have, or little tips or what have you. But I was talking about the homelessness and the unfortunate and what have you, and what I said in the early hours was triggered by the people. I'm going to carelessly describe them as drive-by. They pull up to the beach, and they've maybe given a tour to their friends that are visiting here, and they're in their Lexus or whatever, and they, oh, you know, we need to do something. And then they go back and they call into the Parks Division and complain, or call the city and complain. But the reality is that the people that they should call the city, and they should call the governor's office, and they should complain, but the complaint should be against the governor, because they are responsible. They know what is happening, and they know the amounts of millions. And as I told you, with the city, for example, there are monies that were squandered. Were given out as loans right now, and Ernie Martin and others refuse to demand that money back and stand up and pound the table and says, give it back. That's money that could have gone or helped or benefited the people in those areas. And so it is holiday seasons, Christmas and all, and I think that when you know that there's a human being out there, not a homeless person, not a battered spouse, not a child, an abused child, that's a human being. And then how are they there? And how is it that we give money to an organization that's supposed to go and nurture and monitor them? And
the money's there, and the organizations don't go out, or the organization is diverting money. So, again, what happens with this is that we need to start holding government accountable. When they talk of this trickery about providing affordable homes, tell them to put it up, show us specifically, and let us know that they will not tolerate revisiting the affordable home aspect of the development. As I said, there is this, it's a trick. You commit to, you get your development, then you turn around and you go back and says, well, we'd like to donate $250,000 or $300,000 to offset the affordable home issue there, and we're basically buying it back. And that way we can sell all of our apartments or condominiums or houses at whatever price we want in this block. So there are some things that we're being, we as a community, we as taxpayers, we're not getting the full story. And the issue of homelessness is one that could be easily tackled. We just got to get our heads out of the sand and not be moved by big business. Big business gets what they want, and big business talking about subsidies and tax breaks and what have you, and when it comes back, are we really getting anything? What are we losing? So anyway, this is what we need to address, and we talk about it over and over and over, and it seems to be getting worse. But when you have city councilmen and Senator Will Aspera, it looked like the best thing that he want out of this whole process is to get his family a job. He doesn't pound the table. He doesn't stomp, you know, and demand anything on behalf of the. And the scary thought is he want to go to Washington. That just caused me some pain. But we'll talk about all that next week. We'll respect the observation, the observance of Mr. Inouye, Senator Inouye now, but there's a lot of things need to come to the tables and be talked about in this town. And are there people willing, or are there people willing to just take up the sheet of music and start singing along? Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Marcia.
Yes, I do. There's one area that is not mentioned, and that is property tax and what it does to old folks. We bought our house a couple millenniums ago at a price that we could afford, and the property tax and all that went up, and now we're old and retired, as are so many of our neighbors. One person, two people, buy in at $750,000, that our property tax goes up, and it forces us old folks out of our house, because the property tax is based on this, quote, value, which is not. And they say, well, if you would sell it, that's what you could get for it. I don't want to sell it. I need a place to live. But the property tax is forcing us into homelessness like so many other people. So that is one area that nobody complains about.
Yeah. Well, I've heard them talk about
it. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I've heard them talk about taxes and all, but you got a lot of noise going on tonight, a lot of wind.
Yeah.
So it's distracting, I can't.
Okay, well, I'll have. Let me make this one last comment.
Okay.
Totally different. It's about Inouye.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, he told me that we were blood brothers, and I said, how could that be? And he said when he had his surgery, he lost so much blood that they needed to give him a transfusion, and the white soldiers wouldn't give him blood, and two black ones gave him blood. So from that point on, he told me we were blood brothers.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you when I'm not in the wind.
Yeah, it's you getting a
wind. Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. there's many stories out there, and you know, the last words and the last rites, and I'll wait, but I would love to know what some of you think about the last wishes of having Hanabusa serve on this as a senator, the governor appointing. I personally believe, even though that may have been his wishes, we should decline, and Representative Hanabusa should also decline. This is a democracy, and we should act accordingly. And with all respect and all those things, and when we're honoring people for what hard work they've done and put forth, but in a democracy, I become bothered. You know, I'm even nervous about seeing every time I turn on the TV, I look to see and the Queen of England is coming to this town, that town. The Queen of England sneezed, and then her prodigy offspring is going to have a baby. And someone, and I'm thinking, didn't we fight these people? Didn't we have to tear away from them because of the tyranny and they project upon us and as a nation? And now we're going to invite them back into our houses through their little cute kids. In a democracy, we have to be ever so vigilant. And all of these things is the strength of the nation. If we're willing to let others hang out on the beach and starve and struggle and hang on by the fingernails and drive around and every parking lot is filled with Lexus and building soccer fields that everybody has a 4Runner and run around. I know you were successful and you went to college and did it all, but this is America the last time I read. But anyway, there's many things that I could talk about with that, and maybe next week, but paying giving honor. But yeah, I'm just a little taken aback with every morning there's something about the royal family, and we're seeing apparently royalty here, but I just will hold off. But anyway, it's sad what is going on, and a number of people can't afford to live in these towns. They can't, and what they're doing, they're struggling. And, you know, with this high cost of living and everything, it's also impacting families don't get to visit one another from island to island now. So you have a dismantling, as we speak, of a society as we knew it, as a community as we knew it. Those that can afford it can fly over and buy houses and develop and have major developments with multi-million dollar mansions and what have you, and that seemed to be where we're going, the gentrification and all of that. But my hat's off to Polly Grace and what she did, Miss Polly Grace, and what she has done for the 25 years. And again, the pictures are going to be posted at carolcox.com, and you will see for yourself to see all those bright faces. And they were quite happy yesterday. And so whatever you can do, picking up a phone or giving to an organization that really helps them care. And you know, a great many of them are out there. And I was talking to some of the people that are on the beach, and they were telling me that the only ones that they've really seen is the church groups that come out and feed and take care of them and bring lunch or dinner or whatever, or help them. The groups that were really involved were kind of sketchy. They described it as best. So maybe we can, you could help by just simply calling the governor and calling the mayor and demanding that there become great oversight and accountability on part of these organizations, and check to see what are they paying these guys and how much are they paying them. And do we need staff to get out there and squander money and drive around the town and look cute? You know, these are the things that we need to ask. So
So anyway, that's what it's about. Well, as I said to you earlier, the Humane Society, and this is a subject that I like to talk about because we have animal issues here in this town, and they do go unaddressed. Well, we have a, I like that cute name, the Humane Society, and I just chuckle. You talking about what's in the name? Well, it's a society, and that anything you can draw conclusions or what comes to your mind is probably accurate. But what caught my attention, and I don't like talking about stories that are written up, but this is something that it's rare to get Pam Burns, the Pamela Burns, we'll call her. She didn't, in this article, I didn't see anything that tell us who she really is. It just says, by Pamela Burns. And then we go on. We at the Hawaiian Humane Society are extremely disappointed about the sentencing of David Becker, who was directly responsible for managing a large commercial Climanolo dog breeding operation. And the courts must take animal cruelty serious. I have no doubt the courts take animal cruelty serious. What they probably don't take serious is that an organization that, if you go back and look, we have just so carelessly and recklessly given and granted them because they get a contract with us, and on the HAR, Hawaii Revised, HR, that's the revised statute, we allowed them to do this and take upon the enforcement of. But to be honest with you, the way I see things in the, over the years, their investigative skills are lacking. Their approach to cases are lacking. And as I pointed out to you, when there in instances, they've been so desperate and try to emulate law enforcement by putting on fake badges on the Payne case. And yet, you time and time again, she springs from the ashes of another crash, complaining about the judicial system. But I have a little advice for you, Pam Burns. If you're going to be judge, jury, animal protectionist, executive or CEO of the Humane Society, you need to find out what role you play and then let the others play their role. You can't investigate or half-ass investigate. You can't do that. You have to, one, operate under the Constitution, be guided by that, and the laws of evidence, search and seizure, and all of that. Those are rules. They're written down. Though Moses didn't write them down, they're there. And each time these cases pop up, she runs and screams, runs to the window and screams like something, there's some violation of her rights to do what? If you act like a professional law enforcement agency and treat cases as such, you probably would get a different result. But even so, if you have the perfect scenario and the perfect training, in the perfect approach, leave the sentencing up to the courts. Offer your testimony and offer your evidence, but don't be judge, jury, prosecutor, and then come back to publicist, but you won't dare even acknowledge that you're the one of the, I guess, I don't know what your official title is, executive director of the Hawaiian Humane Society. But time and time again, there was the Jim Montgomery case. If you saw that, and I was privy to a lot of the information, that was simply, we had a lot of questions about that, how it was handled. So a six-month sentence does not provide justice to the animals that were harmed by his actions. We believe that given the 153 counts of animal cruelty, more jail time is warranted. Leave these matters up to the courts. But it's not fair on the part of the Humane Society to run back and second-guess the courts without giving all the details. And she says that it was our hope that this case actually proceeded to trial. Of course, maybe so, but also that's a gamble. What I know about the Humane Society's approach in handling of cases, I would caution you, you shouldn't hope to go to trial. Honestly. Because I haven't seen Sherlock Holmes working and employed for the Humane Society. Yet to meet one. I haven't even seen a Watson. And so what you got here is that this is the perfect example why I say and I argue that we need to revisit these contracts with the Humane Society, Hawaii Humane Society. We need to revamp this whole process as it relates to animal cruelty, animal investigation, animal care, because there's a bit of emotionalism here that causes me concern, and I love animals more than anybody. But when you mix civil rights, human rights, the constitutional rights, and all of that, and then inject the societal or the society's opinion that something should have happened, and they're so boo-hooed about the fact that it didn't go their way, wake up. This is America. This is not the Humane Society. We live in a society, but not one of Humane Society rules. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Carol. I'm kind of disappointed in your attitude towards the Humane Society. They do a lot of good. You must admit that.
Well, you have the mic. Go ahead and tell them what they do good.
Well, they
you got your radio up loud and
oh, I'm sorry. Well, they take care of animals that are, you know, found up by the wayside. They do a lot of good things. I don't have to enumerate them, but I just want to look at the good part as well as the bad part.
Well, we do. We allow them to have rent for free. Or $1 a year, or $1 for 55 years. I don't know, some outrageous number. We give them more than $2 million annually, and we hand that to them, and we have been informed by audits and what have you, that there's discrepancies and commingling and what have you. You're right. It is wrong to focus on one issue. You're right. But let's talk about the things in total. If you have other specifics, I'd be happy to share with you. But I've enumerated them and shared with you, the listeners out there. And I appreciate them knowing that they have someone that would defend them. But I don't know. Give me some specifics. What good do they do other than existing?
Well, they certainly take in animals that people bring them. I mean, they find animals along the road. They have the trucks going around looking for animals that are strays. Mm-hmm. We have a multitude of animals running all over the place, and it works for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then, and so we're not saying that that is not true. What we're saying today, I'm speaking specifically to the fact that if she's the investigator and you submit a case, you do your work up front. Then you submit it to the courts. But when an entity that is responsible for enforcing and preserving the laws and respecting the Constitution and the rights of others, it's just not healthy to have you run back and just take a pot shot at the judicial system. You spend your time working on that, putting together a case with great integrity, then you won't have to. But being judge, jury, and prosecutor is just absolutely wrong.
In other words, you think they should do more legal work?
No, I think that whatever they do, they should do it right. That is, if you have the confidence and you have the responsibility, you should do the investigation. You should have skilled people. And once you do that, submit that case based on the criteria that the prosecutor and what have you, and leave it up to the prosecutor to determine what case, or how great this case is, or how strong it is, or how many counts, to suggest that we had a, could have had 153 counts were warranted. It says here the many charges were warranted. 153 animals were taken into our custody when the puppy mill was inspected by our officers. So when did they inspect it? Do they need more inspections, early inspections? I'm not arguing.
They have limited funds, don't forget.
Well, let me just suggest this, that I think that I don't want to be disrespectful of you or dismiss you, your concerns or any of the statements. I'll take them into consideration, but they could do better. And we've had this, we've seen her before pop up. And I personally think that it's kind of questionable to write by Pamela Burns. Let us know who you are. You know, I mean, what's in the title? You get the salary. Let us know what your real interest is here. Don't just write as if you're some intern.
Or maybe she doesn't want to represent the society. She's doing this as an individual.
Well, she says we at the Hawaii Humane Society are extremely disappointed. We.
Oh, I see.
About the sentencing of David Becker. And again, let me just say that I don't want to live in a society where the policemen arrest me and then go and pound the table, kick the table, and what have you, and demand that I should have gotten a stiffer sentence. That is what the courts are for. That is what the judges are for. That is what the sentencing, the
yeah, but it's our right to disagree with it.
Well, you're right. Exactly. But when you are the executive director or have some high-paying job or one of the leaders in there, then you need to be willing to listen to people to tell you that, look, you can't be judge, jury, and prosecutor. That's just not healthy. I don't care what she is or if I behave that fashion.
So you think they should maybe have a lawyer on the staff?
Well, I think they do. If I write them up and want to get a document from them to see about the cat lady or some incident, they obviously have lawyers because generally is that they write back saying we're exempt from this and we don't have to give you this. So there are many things. I know they have legal representation and they have many of people on their boards that are.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I know how difficult it is to hear someone talk about the Humane Society, but I will tell you, I think the efficiency is lacking. I think that just the other day I sat in Eva Beach and I watched one of their trucks sit there for about 35 minutes in the park, just sitting there. Now, mind you, he could have been doing anything. Could have been doing paperwork, but he was on the phone and just sitting there chatting. And he was there before I arrived. So I'm just submitting, based on this document here, the state, a six-month sentence does not provide justice to the animals that were harmed
well,
by
I agree
his
with him.
Hmm?
Don't you agree with him?
Agree with who?
That statement.
Well, you see, no, what I agree with is that the judge, respecting the judge's stance, the judge was privy to all of the information. The judge is the one who sat there and weighed all the facts and everything. So, you know, if you have an issue, talk specifically to the judge. Appeal to the judge, but don't go out and take a cheap shot and publicly and being reckless and just tossing everything out there. I think that if you really want to really want to support and protect the animals and be a stronger approach, is that we hold them accountable. We don't allow them to take such careless or casual pot shots. And ask the basic question. It's okay if she wants to challenge the courts. That's fine. But then let's ask her, what did she do? Did we find that the guy didn't get charged because they didn't document the evidence properly? Or what factors exist? I mean, you know, But to just go out and assault the court system because you think they should have got more, that's discretion on the judge's part, or what have you. Am I correct?
Well, I think it's a fair, in this society, you can take a pot shot at anybody if you want to.
Well, yeah, and I do occasionally, but in this case, I'm speaking specifically to an entity that has a responsibility, that we have a contractual agreement with, that she's a professional, her organization is a professional. This is why we should be more aggressive in reaching out and allowing other organizations to compete and encouraging that and revisiting what is it that they do.
Mm-hmm.
The whole practice, I mean, to just take a statement and say they do a lot for animals, that's true, but how many animals do we know? How many calls do they get a day?
I have no idea.
Right. So we really are at a loss to protect them or to argue for them. How many people are out there that call daily? How many people that call and say we have a problem with our neighbors harassing an animal or torturing or being cruel? How many people go to call them about chicken fights? What are they really doing when you're looking at the whole responsibility that they have? The animal control. How many jobs or calls do they get that they don't respond to?
Well, I'm sure if you call them, they would give you those figures.
No, they don't. No.
Well, anyway, thanks for your talk.
You're welcome. Well, the protection of the Humane Society, and I would love to have Pam Burns and Keone Vaughn come on the show and speak frankly and speak openly, and rather than looking for these perfect moments and being so casual about and cavalier about their comments, I'd like to see you come out and get into the fold and be available. Don't speak through lawyers and veterinarians that represent you. The city is going to have a Humane Society or some animal control agency anyway, because there's a need for it, whether it's the Hawaiian Humane Society or whomever. Good morning, Carly. You have a comment or question?
Yes, I wanted to go ahead and speak on the comments of the last caller. And with the recent Pam Burns comment,
mm-hmm.
I feel a whole lot of the citizenry here in the city and county of Honolulu need to reassess just exactly what happens on that hill in Mo'ili'ili. They are too secretive. They are non-participatory when it comes to saving the lives of animals. Your previous caller said that they roam around the streets looking for strays. But how many of us know that those strays will be euthanized within 24 hours unless they have a marketable appearance on that? There is too many animals that could possibly have been rehabilitated, rehomed, given foster homes, whatever it is. But they choose, I mean they, HHS. And by the way, I prefer to call them the Hawaiian Inhumane Society. And they euthanize them. Euthanizing is a polite way of putting them down. But actually, they're exterminating these animals.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that 10,000 cats a year are gone poses a problem that we have about spay and neutering. I think there's another way of getting this done. But from what we gather, the preferred choice of the HHS is to euthanize them. I wish that people would rethink, at least become educated, because the Hawaiian Humane Society that existed 50 years ago is not what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And when there are estates being left to the shelter, I'll call it, management of Hawaiian Humane Society and its administration, find it appalling. And when they don't come back and even ask the questions to you because they don't have to, wouldn't you want them to just do it because it would at least lift the veil of secrecy and transparency? Mm-hmm. There are too many animals that are just needlessly. And not, you can't save them all, but you can certainly save some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this recent push for Bill 57, which did not pass at the city council, and of course that's okay, that's what happened. But it brought on a new kind of light to new people that are appalled
mm-hmm.
at the conduct of those, and more illegal.
Okay.
That's about all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
I pulled back the article, and I had written down her comments. Pamela Burns is president and chief executive officer of the Hawaii Humane Society. And, again, there are many questions, and it's so unfortunate that these are contractors. I'm looking at the amount of money on the crow and rooster issue. I requested records from the city. And then there's the park there in Hawaii Kai with the cat issue, where there's also another contract issue to Animal Haven in the past. So I'm looking at all of this, and we're spending a lot of money. And if I go to Nanakuli on the backside on the Naval Road, and I see stray animals. And let me just tell you up front that if you want to talk about the protection of animals and what great good they do, I'm not going to debate that. But what I will tell you, and maybe it's wrong that I look at the bad things, but are they really the bad things or the parts that are burned? We're paying them to do all things. And so here's an example. There are people in Waianae side and other areas as well that will purchase cats for consumption, will eat them. And there are people that are actively selling cats and selling dogs. Now, I told you a while back that the Humane Society, that story I told about them interfering with my investigation of this, just to show you how far they will go, I told the story before, but Letha DeCaris, apparently, I don't know if she's an officer with the police department or was, she called me in and treated me as if I was a criminal because the Humane Society jumped the gun and said that there was a man in a white van buying dogs, and they knew they had this complaint for years back. But to defend themselves, because this is their turf, I speak in those terms. When we, you know, they do a lot for the animals, I'm not going to debate that. But I would say they could do more. Because when I see stray dogs strolling around the streets, strolling around, you go out to the parks, the homeless areas, cats migrate, whether people drop them off and put them there purposely. I don't see the aggressive nature that should be displayed by the Humane Society in these issues. They're unapproachable. You contact them and they treat you like you have scurvy. And maybe if they were to be open and work with others and not be so quick. For example, there was Sabrina Wiener. She had that animal, I can't think of the name, in Hawaii Kai side. And I saw a glimpse of it on TV, and they had the Humane Society, they're knocking on the door and had a newscaster with them asking her how many cats she had. And so my question is, at what point did they call the news person? And let me just tell you, I've found that in some instances, judges will frown on that if you, and you don't have a right to, you may have a right to go knock on the door as an official, but you don't have a right to take
the media in with you. And so that calls into question, are they for show? And why? And so if that was the allegation that she had exceeded the number of cats that were allowed, then why not work with her? But you see, just so happened coincidentally that this organization had one of the contracts, and they view it possibly as a threat. So these are the things that I speak about. Let us know up front how many animals are being euthanized. Speak in languages that we, and make your reports that are coherent. Try to read one of their reports and try to count for the number of animals that they get from the people that spay neuter cats independently, and try to account for those and see what you get. Now, I think that in many instances, I have observed personally and firsthand the dog named Rex is one instance, and many others. Where still yet, they wouldn't answer my questions directly about an animal that was taken in their custody and their employees were involved in it, what have you. And I don't know the end results, but what happened? I can tell you the smoke screen and the obstacles that were put in place when I was asking questions were generated by the Humane Society. But that's just one drop in the bucket. I just think in this instance, there are a lot of organizations out there that I can tell you. They're not trying to be political. They don't care if you know how many animals they are. There are veterinarians out there that volunteer that'll do it. And they should be working directly with them and with the courts. What I've learned over the years, especially when it comes to judges, you don't run out public and paint a sign up and start being critical of the judge because, you know, they're human. And they may incorporate these comments in your next case, whether it's right or wrong. But if you're a zealot, you're acting zealously and you overreact, put your effort and energy in the investigation. And when you package that case and go to the prosecutor to have him see if he's going to decline prosecution or take it and run with it, you serve as the eyes and ears and the person that has collected the best evidence you could ever put together. Not evidence that's manufactured. Don't go and leave the dogs as we showed in Wyandotte with the Payne situation, where they knowingly have the dog signed over and then leave the dogs fecating in the cages in the empty bowls and then turn around and say, see, these are the conditions with the video. Don't do it that way. Do it in a fashion that presents your case. Oh, and by the way, don't wear fake badges because judges may be a little concerned with that. You know, they may not take too kindly of that because they may question your ability to, you know, violate and ignore the rights of the free citizens. But beyond that, you know, you do okay. But fake badges, manufacturing evidence, and just trying to prosecute people that and trying to portray them as we saw in the concerns that were raised in this early issue by a number of groups. Let's stick to your work and try to do the best you can with what you have and respond to calls. But judges, and I don't know if the prosecutor, what relationship, but if I was a prosecutor, I would be quite concerned, and I would say, Pam Burns, you need to send your officers to better investigations and investigative schools and learn about don't complain. Good morning, Carly. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Carol. This is, I wanted to, above all, wish you a most happy holiday season, and excuse me for my tone due to my illness at this time. regards to Humane Society, I understand that the name comes from they humanely put them to sleep. That's how what I understood. What I would like is that now that I have found out what the funds that they get is that in a small little place that they have of the wildlife, they actually have chimneys where they burn all the animals. And during the crisis of the foreclosure, from morning till night, I see a hot smoke coming out of the chimney. And many children who go to field trips to the Humane Society to show them what a wonderful place is. This is where they stay the animals. I actually want to cry about it. Mm-hmm. Are they told that the animals are being burned right there? Some of them, like a bird, if you take the birds or some cats, they don't even hear it. They just put them in a fire. If they have that kind of money, why couldn't they take the animals totally elsewhere to build a chimney where they burn the animals? Is that many of the dogs are in there belong to people like us who love their dogs and cats and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And they have senses that humans don't have, to smell and a sense. And they're shaking there because they can see the body that was next to them are now being put to burn, just burnt. And what I have endured with Humane Society has broken my spirit as well as broken my financially. I have endured a lot, but I want nothing more than if the Humane Society could possibly take the chimney and burn the animal elsewhere rather than where people do come in searching for their beloved one that perhaps got away, as well as there are foreigners, Chinese, Japanese, and they're not aware of a Humane Society who might caught their animal when they lost their dog got away. I could say more, but above all, I want to wish you merry, merry, happy holiday season.
Okay.
And thank you for allowing me to talk.
Thank you. Aloha. Well, again, as far as the incinerator, I don't know. I'm going to ask the state health department, the clean air branch. I don't know if they've stopped incinerating there. They used to, and I did have their file on the number of animals that were burned and the poundage that burned daily. Or they give an actual report. So I've gotten mixed information is that they're no longer... And they're farming it out to someone. But again, I've asked the health department for those records, and we'll just wait and see. But again, this is what's troubling. That when I speak of this, I have no issue with the Humane Society. What I have an issue with is that they are performing a contractual agreement. And the efficiency of that and the earlier audit showed some discrepancies and some shortcomings. And it is my opinion and my observation that some of those still have not been addressed. So while we may be concerned with how bad it sounds about them, just like she is willing to attack the courts and feel that she has that right to, then right here at the Carol Cox Show, we're going to demonstrate the same behavior. We're going to behave the same way. We're going to exercise our rights to speak. So that is about the best I can describe this to you. And that nothing can be perfect because you're dealing with bureaucracy and you're dealing with... But I can tell you they should be more approachable. People in general that I know, the ones that go out at night, let me just say this to you. Most of them that are in the cat, neuter, spay business, whether you like them or don't like them, they're doing it good. Because if the cats are there and people are releasing them, they're going to breed. You're going to have a population. If Humane Society doesn't have the money now to deal with the issue, imagine what it will turn into. So why don't the Humane Society, rather than worry about how many they picked alongside the road, why don't they open their doors 24/7 and avail themselves and reach out and work with the cat people? Why is it that full-grown people, human beings, are afraid of the Humane Society because they're doing things that the Humane Society be doing? If you cost them, you are out. Why? they see it as working against them. The reality is that there are people out there that are fearful, that are trying to do good. And you can go away thinking whatever you want about that body of people, but they should be more complimentary of the people. The Humane Society should create a relationship and foster that relationship, working with the people that are feeding cats. But the average person that is feeding and spaying and neutering, they're on their own. And they're likely to be drug through tar. And the Humane Society, where are they? You go there at nighttime, they say 24 hours. I've been there, as I told you weeks ago, they're not open 24 hours. They'll close the door because the officer has to leave. So why do we have to bring animals in at 10 o'clock at night to have them spayed? These are facilities that if you don't have the manpower, maybe some of the cat people or the dog people will volunteer to man the desk at that time. So I'm not buying it, and I just a word of caution that if you don't like the way the courts are, and I'm not saying you should look at the courts as being something that you can't speak out against, but if you're part of the problem and you're the one who's gathering the evidence and you should have been monitoring these facilities all along and you should increase your inspections of them, then don't complain that he had 153. How did he acquire 153 in these deplorable conditions as you described, or just too partially quoting it? How did they arrive at that? You know, rather than crying crocodile tears, what you should do is reach out to people like myself and others. We don't bite. We don't need rabies shots. We have the same concerns you have, other than we're not looking for a contract. So I'm sorry this whole bit about the courts is misplaced, and I would say you should use your brain cells on something else and see what you can do to be more reachable to the people that are out there doing the work that you should be doing, and compliment them rather than slapping them around. But if you want to chase the courts, I can tell you I've seen judges place you in a predicament where you don't go out publicly and strike out. You present the evidence and leave the judging to us and the punishment to us. So anyway, I'm not speaking for the courts, but I just have some history and know they're human too. So anyway, talk to you next week, and hopefully everything work out, and see you Sunday. Real quick, call us.
All right.
Real quick, we got 30 seconds. Quick.
We are a nation of hypocrisy. A people who have nothing to eat, nothing to sleep on, nothing to go anywhere. But we have spent millions of dollars for one man's funeral. There's nothing right now in OANA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, any more?
Well, the same thing can be said about Humane Society.
Yeah.
Concern over animals. But ignore people walking past you.
Yeah, I agree with you. But,
okay.
Well, next week we'll take it up. Aloha, and thank all of you, and I appreciate all of you callers. And, again, it's not what I'm saying is right and written in stone. It's just something to stimulate and serve as a catalyst. So get to thinking. Aloha.
Every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show right here at KWAI Honolulu.